Thanks for joining me for this week's Admission Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and ultimately successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you get to that delightful instant when you can jump up and down and shout, "Yes, I'm in." And not only in, but in at the best program for you. Now, we had a question on the blog this week, an interesting question that I would like to address here. The question is, would it be wise to talk about past depression? And this was in response to a post that we had about dealing with weakness in your application. And actually, it was a post that contained a video that dealt with that topic, about dealing with weaknesses in your application. Now, in terms of responding to the question that was posted by somebody using the pseudonym Cadbury, I think that the thing for you to take away here is that details matter a lot, so please don't take my answer as a categorical one that applies in all situations and for all people, because details, as I said, matter a lot and could possibly change my response. But in general, if depression, like any other illness, caused your grades to drop or contributed to a period of unemployment in the past, then yes, you can mention it and probably should mention it as a cause or contributing factor for whatever blemish you are addressing. At the same time, focus in addressing and mentioning the depression on evidence that is no longer affecting your performance, or even better, that it is not an issue of the past. It's something in your past, behind you, you're feeling good, you're healthy, and you are, able to perform as any other healthy individual performs. If you were fortunate enough not to have the depression affect your grades or performance or qualifications, then I see no reason and no benefit in mentioning it in your application. Now, this is a question that I received on the blog, but I invite your questions in many different venues, and I'd be happy to address them on Admission Straight Talk. If you have an admissions-related question, just go to the show notes for this podcast at info.accepted.com/73 or any other of the podcasts, and you will see a widget that will allow you to leave an audio message in which you can ask your question. You can, I shouldn't say any of the podcasts, but certainly the last 10. You can speak using your computer mic or your phone. You can also send me questions via email at questions@accepted.com. If your question is chosen, I'll ask and answer it on the show. Oh, and FYI, if you just want to ask your question in a comment on the blog, as Cadbury did, feel free to do that too. We're developing a wonderful and thoughtful community on Accepted. So, again, whether it's via the widget that we have on the podcast shows that are on the blog, via email, or simply in a comment on the blog, feel free to post. And I'd like to see the community aspect of Accepted grow even stronger and more valuable. I'd like now to introduce today's guest, Sherry Ubert, Associate Dean of MBA Admissions at Georgetown McDonough School of Business. Sherry earned her BA from Dartmouth and her MBA from Harvard Business School. Since getting her MBA, she has worked for BCG, NBC Universal, GE, Citi, and most recently, the Peace Corps. At Citi and GE, she was in charge of campus recruitment. Similarly, at the Peace Corps, Sherry worked as director of recruitment. Clearly, Sherry, like Georgetown, has worked at the intersection of business and government. Sherry, although I visited you at Georgetown a couple of years ago and have met you since at AGAC conferences, this is the first time I've had the pleasure of chatting with you on Admission Straight Talk. Welcome. I'm so pleased you could make it. Thank you for coming.
Thanks so much, Linda, and thank you for inviting me. I have to credit you with my introduction to AGAC and the wonderful colleagues that you have in that space. I have been in the industry now for a little over a year and a half, working on towards 2 years, and this has just been a wonderful transition for me. So, and you're part of that, so I appreciate your inviting me to your program.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you. Okay, great. Can you give us an overview of the full-time MBA program at McDonough? There may be some listeners who aren't that familiar with the program itself.
Sure, yeah. So, we're a part of the Georgetown University family of distinguished and world-renowned graduate programs, and the business school actually is fairly young compared to the other programs at Georgetown. We're about 30 years old. We are located in Washington, D.C., as most people know. So really at the hub is like you like to say, business and what we say, policy. Okay. Our mission really is to ensure that we're developing principal leaders with a global mindset to impact both business and society. And so when we think about our full-time MBA program, we do offer other types of MBA programs, but when we're talking about a full-time MBA program, it's 2 years in duration, similar to many of the other traditional MBA programs, but it's a small enough size in that there's about 270 students in each class that allows for meaningful access to faculty who are at the height of their careers in terms of their research, and it also offers a very collaborative student-to-student experience, which is one of the things I think is pretty unique about our program. Our students complete their first year in one of four cohorts, so even though you're in a part of a 270 class, you're even broken down into smaller sections or cohorts, so you really get a chance to interact with your peers. And the curriculum is very much a mix of case and lecture, which I think is really nice, and it offers lots of team-based projects and experiential learning.
Okay.
We also offer a number of core courses that are integrated and are taught by two faculties from different disciplines. You know, recognizing that business is not siloed, as, you know, we both know well.
Right.
It's multifaceted, and in terms of what's needed to solve problems, we're looking at being able to teach our students that, you know, you can tackle these problems from two different, areas of discipline. So, for instance, we have a course called, this is in the core, Firm Analysis and Strategy. And that course really looks at both the microeconomics as well as the competitive strategy as it relates to the understanding of how to make the strategic decisions that impact the firm's ability to achieve and maintain its competitive advantage. And it's really based on a solid understanding of the competitive landscape and industry analysis. In addition to the academics, I think one of the best aspects of our program is the increased level of career support that we're starting to provide our students. That was one of the things I was really impressed with when I came to Georgetown.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to admit, I've known a lot about the program myself. It starts at least, you know, our career support that we provide to our students starts at least 2 months before they even step foot on campus. And it really lasts throughout their life as an alum. So we're really proud that we provide and offer lifelong alumni career services. For the students, though, they get a choice of career coaches. And those coaches have industry expertise across 14 different sectors. They're specialized as well in helping students, you know, think about their strengths, think about where their passions intersect. And so we have what we call career clarification coaches as well. For those students who are international, we also provide international coaches who are really well-versed in the H-1B visa process.
Hmm.
They really help the students be able to tell their story to companies about, you know, how they best can support them if those companies are willing to sponsor. And then I really like this aspect in that we offer what we call peer advisors, and these are second-year students that have firsthand knowledge of the whole job search process, right? So they're helping students prepare for their interviews, taking a look at their cover letters, giving them advice, connecting them to alumni, that kind of thing. So we really, you know, I find that the career services is extremely holistic and is one that has really, you know, continued to grow and to develop. We also offer a number of classes. They're optional, but they're classes that take place during the first semester of the core, and they really focus on the job search process and how best to tell your story. And then we are also able to connect students to alumni in the various functional industry areas that they're interested in and have a really fantastic proprietary database of historical information on all the different types of careers and salaries that our graduates have had coming out of our program.
That's great. Thank you. Now, in preparing for this call and, you know, reviewing your website and just thinking about what I know about Georgetown, two aspects of Georgetown's program really, really caught my eye. And that is the word global was repeated over and over and over, the global aspect of the program and the role that it has carved out for itself as we mentioned, at the intersection, the nexus of business and government, or what you call business and policy. So can we first explore the global aspect of the program? How is that manifested in the classroom, in the structure of the program overall, in the classroom and experiential learning opportunities, and then ultimately in career opportunities? And I know you touched on that a little bit in your overview, but maybe we can focus in on a little bit more.
Sure. So I think I'll answer that in a few ways. First,
okay.
The program is global by, you know, the sheer nature of the student body that exists in our program. And we're really happy. This year we hit a record of 41% international, and they represent 39 different countries around the world. So just by virtue of being and interacting with students, you get a global, you know, acculturation experience.
Right.
Second, you know, we offer students a very experienced, so like I mentioned, team-based course within the first 2 weeks that they're in the program. and before they begin their core course, as a matter of fact. And we call it the Structure of Global Industries. Now, they take this course in addition to their accounting fundamentals course so that they really have a strong foundation in the language of business, which really is accounting, right? And right. It's been a trial by fire experience in terms of the decisions that a business leader must make in order to determine where to place new operations or expand internationally. And so with that, those two courses, making up what we call opening term, they really do get a great immersion and a great way of understanding global business. The Structure of Global Industries course is taught by a number of different faculty who are truly recognized in their field. One gentleman, his name is Brad Jensen, and he's an expert in international trade and investment and has worked with the White House providing his thought leadership and research. Stan Nolan is another professor. He's an expert in the field of international business, especially as it relates to emerging markets, and has won a number of Fulbright awards for his work. And then we also have a couple of professors that do courses in team dynamics, right, because this is a team-based experiential course, mm-hmm. as well as ethical decision-making. Mm-hmm. So all these skills, the accounting, the team dynamics, the ethical decision-making, you know, the ability to understand the international business environment, you know, the micro and macroeconomic factors that impact global business, as well as all the cultural and geopolitical factors, you know, they're all immersed in these concepts all within the first 3 weeks. And so we feel as though our students really get this wonderful experience before they even start, you know, their core courses. And the feedback that we've gotten is that it's very intense, you know, yet very exciting, you know.
This is all just the orientation, right?
Yeah, well, this is after the orientation, right? So you have the orientation, which lasts a week, and then you start what we call opening term. So it's 3 weeks.
Uh-huh.
And then after opening term is really when they start their official core.
Got it.
Core course, right?
That first semester.
And so, but the opening term really is what sets the pace and the groundwork for the rest of their first year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'd also say that one of our capstone courses, so that happens at the beginning of someone's experience in our program. Now, they go through the core courses, and then at the end of their 2 years, we have another course that's really the capstone of their 2 years. It's called the Global Business Experience. And that is really a practicum that's been around for over 10 years. We're one of the first schools that have really, you know, set up a structure, and it's a required course where students have to really put their skills to use and all that they've learned in business school to use on real clients, real projects. And so students work in teams again. They choose a client, they choose a project, and they choose a country where they'll serve as an international consultant. And they conduct analysis and business, via international conference calls. Some might have an interpreter depending on the language skills that are needed. And they do this for about a month stateside. And then once they're ready to present their deliverables to the client, they travel as a group with a faculty member over to that particular international city. And then once they've done their presentation, their deliverable, they then spend the rest of the week really touring other businesses in the area. They'll do a community service project in an underserved community in that country as well. So it's a really well-rounded cultural experience as well as business educational experience.
Okay, great. Thank you. Does the global nature of the program carry over? Well, you mentioned actually that your career managers are very, very knowledgeable, H-1B visas, et cetera. Does they also have the expertise to help some of those international students go back home if that's what they want to do?
They do. And so our career structure is really unique in that there's a two-pronged approach or strategy that we really help our students develop. And then one is, you know, a strategy that is focused on if they want to stay in the U.S. in that approach. And in parallel, there's a strategy for international students to say, you know what, you need to also be making time, preparing, and planning for the kinds of networks and relationships that you need to do if you need to go back home as well. And one of the unique, events that we offer, we've now offered for the past 4 years, is what we call the Global Career Conference and Expo. And that's an event that's put on by our Career Services Center. We invite students from the top 25 business schools across the U.S. to come. Mm-hmm. We also invite 20 to 30 companies. These are multinationals, NGOs, you name it, in terms of the sector and industry. But the core that's in common is the fact that they are interested in hiring talent for international opportunities. So that could be U.S. domestic students looking to work abroad, or it could be international students looking to work abroad. that we find that that's been a really successful program as well in support mechanism to help international students especially gain access.
Thank you. Now, let's go on to the next area that caught my eye in preparing for today's call, and that is in something, again, on your website, you know, Georgetown very much and very naturally, appropriately touts its Washington location, its being at the intersection of business and policy. What does being at the intersection of business and policy mean in terms of the McDonough program, the classroom experience, and ultimately career placement?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I really like this term of being at the nexus of business and policy, and our Dean David Thomas reiterates that a lot. And, there's a real distinction, I think, in terms of being at the nexus of business and policy versus business and government.
Okay.
And that in terms of the types of, in terms of the people's perception of the school and the types of students that we either attract or where they go afterwards. And, our students really go into many different industries. There's very few, if any, that are not regulated in some way nowadays. So that means that they need to really understand and care about how policies are made and what effect that those policies will have on the ability of a company or an industry to remain competitive. And our faculty conduct research at this nexus, right? They serve as thought leaders to policymakers so that they're more educated about the various industries that are directly impacting the policies that they developed. And our faculty have this unique knowledge and set of relationships they then bring into the classroom, infusing the cases that are taught. They also bring students along with them into the, organizations where the policymakers exist. For instance, we have a Center for Financial Markets and Policy that is run by an internationally renowned faculty. Her name is Reena Agarwal.
Mm-hmm.
And she regularly briefs Congress on the financial markets and will bring students with her.
Yeah.
There's just no substitution for that type of experiential learning. Our student GAs or graduate assistants are also working with faculty on research that impacts business practice and has, policy-wide implications. For instance, our Center for Business and Public Policy just started a project to explore the policy changes and opportunities raised by the rapid pace of innovation in digital and communications technologies. And they convene industry experts, academics, policymakers, and students on a number of different issues that business leaders care about in terms of how it relates to the viability of their companies and industries that they're in. In addition, many of our initiatives, I would say, are co-curricular in nature, and so they provide a wealth of opportunities for students as well to take advantage of them in a variety of different ways. And the three that I think come to mind are entrepreneurship initiative, and I know that you've actually spoken to Jeff Reed
before
in your program.
Right, and I will link to that show about the entrepreneurship initiative from the show notes for this show.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. But, so we partner with the 1776 Accelerator, which is right in downtown D.C., and they provide space for our students as well as resources for those students interested in starting their own businesses. Our real estate initiative has a number of relationships with local real estate firms in the D.C. metro area, and they allow our students to work on underwriting actual live deals.
Mm-hmm.
We also provide year-round internships for the students so that they can get practical experience in the real estate finance world. We also have the Global Social Enterprise Initiative, and they provide opportunities for our students to partner with trade associations, corporations, and other federal agencies in D.C. on issues that address social and environmental changes. For instance, right now they're working on a project with the American Farm Bureau Federation in the White House. It's called the Rural Entrepreneurship Challenge, and it offers farmers and others living in rural communities the seed money to develop their ideas. So our students would work on vetting these business plans, organizing the final competitions, which will be judged by academics and industry leaders.
Great.
In terms of, I think you're also going to talk about, wanting me to talk a little bit about the careers and how that's a connection with D.C. And I'm proud that, all our students end up all over the world, not only in D.C. We have a vast network of alumni and corporate and organizational relationships that expand outside the Mid-Atlantic, with many students, as you know, ending up in finance and consulting.
Mm-hmm.
In cities like New York, Chicago, Boston, San Fran. But for those students who do want to stay in D.C., there's no shortage of consulting, real estate, high-tech, federal agencies, and international development NGOs that love our students. For instance, the World Bank has close to 500 Georgetown alumni working there.
Cool.
IFC and OPEC recruit our students regularly. And recently, we had the CIA and the FBI start coming to campus to recruit this year, actually. So we're really excited about that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 500 at the World Bank, that's a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, that's across Georgetown University, of course.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I think you've partially answered my question, but my next question is, when an applicant comes to me and says she's interested in international development work or working in government, business and policy or international business, I mm-hmm. immediately start thinking what schools would be right for this applicant. And McDonough would certainly come to my mind very quickly. That's clearly a strength at Georgetown. What are some other strengths that are not as well known that I and applicants should be aware of?
Sure. So I see, you know, more and more applicants coming from non-traditional fields these days, and, you know, I chuckle when I hear, you know, them talk about themselves being in non-traditional fields, because those non-traditional fields are becoming even more traditional.
Yeah, right.
So because many folks now are interested in the social sector and social enterprise in some way, shape, or form, either if not the short term, but in the long term, and we just love to see that. And, you know, given our Jesuit values and tradition, you know, being rooted in the notion of, you know, being of service to men and women and caring for the whole person, we love it when we see students who want to marry a business degree with doing something that's socially oriented as well. And so I think one of the things that they don't necessarily think of us, but I would love them to more, is around our Global Social Enterprise Initiative. And the objective of that initiative is to address social need and market failures through core business, stakeholder engagement, and public-private partnershiping.
Okay.
And it's founded by a professor. His name is Bill Novelli, and he used to head up the AARP. He came, and he's now at Georgetown. And under the direction of LaDame Metigny, who's the director of the initiative, they've both really developed these wonderful partnerships and, you know, brought to campus, you know, organizations as well as individuals that are really making a difference in the space. So, for instance, the CEO of Bank America, and Bank America was one of the founding partners of the Global Social Enterprise Initiative. He came, Bono, from the one right. organization, U2, came on campus last year. Phillips Company, they are a partner, and they're doing a really interesting project with our initiative and with our students. They're working to help seniors remain mobile and independent by developing technology solutions. Like I mentioned, the American Farm Bureau is a partner, and then the CAPE Foundation is also partnering with the Global Social Enterprise Initiative, and they're working with policymakers on changes that are needed to increase social, you know, impact investment in the U.S. And the platform, really, of the Global Social Enterprise Initiative is based on convening thought leadership around topics of social importance, developing private, public, and nonprofit partnerships to work on concrete projects with students, and then engaging in practical research that can be used by policymakers and business leaders in corporate America. And so, you know, as it pertains directly to, well, what does this mean for students in terms of how they can take advantage? It's co-curricular as well, and we offer our students courses. The initiative itself is co-curricular, and we mm-hmm. also offer actual courses for credit, and those are in social responsibility, nonprofit management, impact investing, and principal leadership in business and society. The co-curricular activities that go along with that then enable our students to really work on real projects with faculty in a social venture lab that we offer. They also are provided with executives and residents that will serve as mentors to them as they're working on their projects and they're interested in various social enterprise, you know, entrepreneurial initiatives as well. Mm-hmm. Anyone interested in energy conservation. We also offer them the opportunity to help spearhead and vet plans in a national competition for small to mid-sized communities. And we offer these communities financial prizes for developing sustainable and replicable solutions to reduce residential and municipal energy use. So our students are helping to really vet those and be a part of those competitions. And then, you know, for those really, really committed, we also offer a fellows program. And that's been done in conjunction with the School of Foreign Service. They're called Global Social Enterprise Fellows. There are 14 fellows per year selected across both the business school as well as the School of Foreign Service. And the goal is really, it's a selective process, and the goal is really to help students hone through both coursework and experiential learning their entrepreneurial skills in the social enterprise sector. So, you know, they'll work with both international and domestic nonprofit and for-profit entities and help them develop business plans to access donor and investors.
Okay.
That's a really... It's a wonderful initiative. It continues to grow every year. And I'm hoping that by virtue of being able to spread the word that more and more people interested in this space and how they can leverage a business degree in this space will take note of this.
That's great. Thank you. Another question. What is the, and then I want to turn to the admissions process itself. What is the real estate finance initiative at Georgetown?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, our real estate initiative is another very highly applied and experiential program. Again, it's co-curricular. It's led by a faculty member's name is Matt Seifer. He's a professor of the practice who has spent years at Invesco in their real estate group. And his pedagogical philosophy really is around, you know, top-down and bottom-up. So he ensures our students have a firm understanding of macroeconomic issues and their implications on the real estate, on real estate investments in financial as well as physical attributes at the property level. So our students are, you know, trained in real estate analytical tools like Argus and Excel-based modeling, so again, very rigorous. Mm-hmm. And learn about, you know, both the public and the private side of real estate finance as well as equity and debt products through the courses that they take. I think one of the unique aspects of this initiative is that they participate in what we call a real estate clinic, and that allows them to actually get underwriting experience on live deals. In fact, in just 12 months last year, our students underwrote more than $1 billion of live institutional quality real estate investments.
Whoa.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Given that the program is relatively new.
$1 billion?
You know,
did I hear that?
Take advantage of year-round internships in the local D.C. real estate community.
Right.
So, you know, Matt has really done a wonderful job, along with a number of very distinguished alumni in the real estate space, to open up these opportunities for students that is extremely, you know, practice and experientially based.
I just want to make sure. You said a billion with a B, right? B as in boy, B as in billion.
Yes, I did.
Okay. That's what I thought I heard. That is a lot.
I know, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, finally, we offer a real estate finance scholarship. And that's a brand new scholarship that the initiative just started to offer as of last year. And they're merit-based scholarships for those who are, you know, have demonstrated interest in pursuing a career in real estate finance. We offer 6 scholarships at $10,000 per year per scholarship. So,
wow.
So again, another, you know, lesser known but just wonderfully, you know, well-run and value-added initiative.
Great, thank you. Now let's turn to the application process. After all, this is a program about admissions, right?
Yes.
McDonough has one required question. And by the way, that's a little bit tongue-in-cheek. I believe that knowing about the programs you're applying to is an integral part of the admissions process. So there's no conflict in what we've been discussing to this point.
Not at all.
McDonough has,
and plus we want to be as transparent as possible, you know?
Right. And I think the applicants should know as much as possible before they apply. It's a major investment.
That's right.
It's part of the process.
Mm-hmm.
McDonough has, at this point, one required question and gives applicants a generous 750 words to respond to why you. Kudos mm-hmm. for succinctness. But can you elaborate a little bit on what you're looking for here?
Yeah. you know, I do recognize it's very open-ended, but it's purposely so. So, you know, we'll see how students respond, and I'm very eager to start reading their applications to find out. But, you know, what we really want applicants to tell us is why they feel they're a fit for Georgetown.
Okay.
And what they would bring to the table that sets them apart. So we want them to go beyond, you know, what they can find on our website and help us understand how they think.
Okay.
What their character is built on and why, right?
Right.
And how their background has shaped who they are, what they want, and why they want it, and how Georgetown MBA can help them achieve their life and career goals. You know, if we succeed in getting a better sense of our applicants in this process, that's great. If not, we're open to rethinking a different question next
year. Just come up with a different question. No, you know, definitely not locked in there. I noticed that, and I think it's a great question. I noticed that your office is making an effort to have applicants view it as a resource they can turn to throughout the admissions process. And I think that is something really distinctive. Some admissions offices are more like that, some are less. But as far as I know, you are the only one or one of the few that actually assigns applicants their own admissions advisor. Who are these advisors, and what is their role, and when should applicants turn to them?
Sure. You know, I'm really proud of that and glad that you're seeing it come through in what you've been hearing in terms of, you know, that being a part of our reputation. You know, our team really believes, and this is, you know, a personal motto of mine as well, that, you know, we're in the people business, not just the process business when it comes to admissions, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
at the end of the day, we really want applicants who experience us to have a positive experience, have positive things to say about Georgetown, regardless of whether or not, you know, we choose to accept them or whether or not they choose to accept us, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we're, you know, very keenly sensitive to how stressful the process can be of applying to business school. You know, interesting, and this is a little bit of an aside, my team and I recently undertook a team exercise using a concept called design thinking. Are you familiar with that?
A little bit.
Yeah. So we journey
an iterative approach to solving a problem, developing a process. Right?
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. So we took, and so the opportunity that we took was to take a look at our process from the time someone even contemplates whether or not they want to pursue an MBA to the time they step foot on our campus. And it was just so enlightening to kind of be able to walk through their shoes, right?
Right.
And, you know, I personally understand, and a lot of my team, people on my team have MBA, so we personally understand the journey. But to see it as it relates to the journey through Georgetown McDonough's process, I think, was really what was enlightening. You know, the lows by no surprise are, you know, those times that we feel like we don't have a lot of control, right? So mm-hmm. one area is, you know, taking the GMAT, and whatever score you get, that's what you get. Another low was, you know, after you submit an application, but before you get the decision, there's this, you know, time that you just don't know what to do, and there's a little bit of angst there. And so, you know, we really wanted to make sure that there was more of a human element inserted in order to serve as a soundboard, offer advice, counsel, or guidance. So the process is a bit more transparent for applicants, and they feel as though there's someone they can turn to that's an advocate for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so our admissions advisors are assigned to every person who submits an application as soon as they submit. And, you know, those advisors stay with that person until a decision is rendered. So that could be, you know, if the person doesn't, for some reason, get accepted, then the admissions advisor relationship ends. But if the person gets accepted and continues to stay in there and deposit, that relationship stays throughout the time, you know, until they get to campus.
Wow. So they could call them up.
They could call them up,
let's say, after they're accepted about advice on, I don't know, finding an apartment or whatever, or...
We provide more, you know, organized types of resources. You know, mm-hmm. we might put them in touch with students. We have an admitted welcome website that students will share information like that. We have, during our welcome weekends, we have a whole session on, you know, in and around D.C. and life in D.C. and housing and that kind of thing. So yeah.
Right, or if, let's say, they had a certain source.
We're not brokers for apartment buildings.
No, I understand. Yeah, I realize that was somewhat of a trivial example. But let's say somebody had expected a certain funding source that was going to come through and it didn't come through, or they were hit with an unusually large expense, and that was suddenly affecting their ability to attend the program that they wanted to attend. Would they turn to their admissions advisor?
Well, they would turn to their admissions advisor to understand where within the Georgetown system could provide them with that level of attention and support, right? So the best option would be for them to get connected to the financial aid office, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so to the extent that person didn't know that or couldn't know how to get a hold of their, you know, financial aid officer, our admissions advisors are there to serve as liaisons to help mm-hmm. get, you know, connect the applicant, connect the student, connect the person who, you know, who has an incoming student to the resources that they need to make it a smooth transition.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Okay.
We also have, you know, and so that's once someone actually applies. They get assigned an admissions advisor, and it's really based on alphabetical last names.
Okay.
And then, but before that, let's say further up in the process, before you apply, we also have what we call admissions advisors who are on call, AOCs, A-A-O-C, admission advisor on call.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a new person that, you know, rotates every week, and they serve as a resource for prospects, you know, who are still trying to figure it all out on the front end of applying.
Right.
And we accept walk-ins daily. We're available for calls or Skype conversations. We also have a number of staff, admission staff, as well as student advisors who are available to answer email inquiries as well on a daily basis. So, again, we're really trying to increase the level of access that we, you know, that we can provide to individuals who are thinking about and considering our program. And, you know, hopefully we're striking the right balance.
What about, I mean, you mentioned low points. Obviously, a big low point is for applicants if they're rejected. Are you considering mm-hmm. are you considering providing feedback to rejected applicants?
Linda, that's a great question. So for the first time this year, I started providing feedback for anyone. You know, we haven't advertised it yet, so I think this year is really where we'll be a little bit more concerted and organized and trying to get the word out that we do this. But this year, I've had a number of conversations with individuals who are either waitlisted and didn't get off the waitlist or denied outright about, you know, what can they do to, you know, make themselves more competitive should they decide to reapply. So, yes, absolutely happy to do that.
All right, great. Now, stepping back even further in this process, you obviously have been director of admissions for almost 2 years now. You have your own MBA, and you were in recruitment for many years on the corporate side, so you also know what business is looking for. What do you really wish MBA applicants would think about or do before starting the application process?
Okay, that's a good question. You know, I would say, first of all, start that process at least at the minimum 6 months to a year in advance mm-hmm. of when you actually want to matriculate. Mm-hmm. And then the average, I've heard stats say at least 18 months on average people are starting the process. I think the earlier the better. Mm-hmm. You know, to get into the stronger programs, it really takes planning and time. And most of it, the time I find, is spent reflecting, right, on where you currently are in your professional life, where you want to be, what type of degree or additional development do you need to get there. And that just takes time that you have to dedicate and devote. I'd also recommend people talk to their friends and their family who've gotten their MBAs in the past. You know, I spoke to no fewer than 10 people that I knew had gone to the schools that I was actually interested in, even mm-hmm. before starting the process of studying for the GMAT. I also did my research online and attended as many events as I possibly can. I recognize that students who are, or prospective students who are living abroad, it might be a little bit more challenging, but there are virtual events that people can attend. There's, sure. again, you know, access to admissions representatives, students, alumni that you can avail yourself of. So I really recommend people do that.
Podcasts.
You know, I'm always glad to see young men and women at various MBA events and fairs who aren't planning to apply until the following year, but are
right.
starting the process early, right?
Right, right.
To me, that means that, you know, we're doing as an admissions professional, I'm doing my job, and we're doing our job to grow the pipeline of potential MBAs. So I love it when I see people starting way in advance of when they actually are planning to apply. I'd also encourage people to be honest with themselves about their level of competitiveness mm-hmm. and then where they decide to place their eggs in terms of applying.
Right.
You know, I know it's easy for all of us to feel special and that we'll be the exception to every rule if we can only share our story. but it also takes being realistic. For instance,
yeah.
if, you know, again, this is only an example, but if you have 1 to 2 years of work experience, but the class average for the school you're interested in is closer to 4 to 5, then you should understand your positioning and make sure that you can defend the amount of work experience that you do have and
right.
justify why it's just as solid as someone who's had more.
Right.
You know, it doesn't mean that you shouldn't apply or that you won't get in, but it just means be realistic about how competitive you are or will be with others who are also applying.
That's right.
So that you can make sure that you tighten up all other areas or been able to really demonstrate how you're really, you know, a superstar in some other aspect of that application. And then finally, I can't underscore this more, but, you know, how important it is for applicants to think about how they're planning to finance their MBA even before applying.
Right.
So scholarships are wonderful, and most schools will offer some level of merit-based scholarships. We do the same, but they're not guaranteed, so you should not use that as part of your financing plan. You know, you should think of that as gravy. And so you should really be prepared to finance it on your own or with the help from family if you're so fortunate to be able to have that level of assistance. You know, most schools also offer domestic students financial aid, but at the MBA level, it tends to be mostly federal loans. So, you know, the one great thing about an MBA is that the return on investment usually pays for itself soon after graduation, or at least you're in a very good position to easily
right.
service the debt, depending on your other obligations in the career field you choose. So the MBA in and of itself is a great return on investment, but I just, you know, I can't, you know, emphasize it more or strong enough to say that, you know, finances shouldn't dissuade you from pursuing your MBA, but you need to be smart about it, and you need to plan accordingly.
That's great advice, great insight. Thank you. Now, when you're evaluating an application from an applicant to Georgetown McDonough, what gets you And let's say you've been doing it all day, all right? You're tired. It's 10 p.m. or later. You reviewed, I don't know, how many files can you review in a day? A few hundred?
Mm-hmm.
Busy day. What would, at that hour, get you excited about an applicant? Positively.
In a positive way. Okay. You know, I would say when I can, and again, you know, it's a little harder when you're reading it, right? So for me, what gets me juiced up is when I can actually interact with someone face-to-face or over the phone or just hear them, you know, in some kind of a live interaction. But when I, when what comes through their application is a level of genuineness and honesty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like confidence with a bit of humility. I like folks who are asking interesting questions, mm-hmm. not just for the sake of asking, but because they really are trying to understand if Georgetown is the right place for them.
Right.
I also get excited when I see applicants or prospects who are excited about us and about what we have to offer and who are respectful of everyone that they meet throughout the process.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Now, you know, on the flip side, can I share with you?
Sure, absolutely.
Does it get me excited?
That gets you really ticked off.
And that's, you know, it's interesting. So I think, you know, so when students ask, so what differentiates Georgetown from other top schools?
Yeah.
And, you know, to be honest, you know, we offer the same caliber of degree and a similar curriculum. We use the same case-based methods as my alma mater, HBS, as the school I turned down, Wharton, and as the school that waitlisted me, which was Columbia.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, we're also nicely situated in great urban cities like these other fine schools as well. So, you know, coming to Georgetown isn't so much about what will I get that's different, but about what will I receive that is similar such that it will allow me to compete along with my peers who are coming from these other schools as well. And at the end of the day, people search for an MBA degree that has earning potential, you know, has a strong and positive reputation in their career industry and one that will prepare them to compete over the long haul in order to fill whatever their life goals are. You know, and that's about what Georgetown has in common with other top programs, not about what's different. So if you choose Georgetown, you know, you should know that you'll get the same academic rigor, business and managerial tools and frameworks and the same skill development that one comes to expect from any and all certain programs of a certain caliber. And that companies, quite frankly, also know to be true from, you know, strong MBA degrees, right? So,
right.
You know, our students choose to come not because of our differences, but because of those that level of similarity. You know, and those aspects of what makes us unique, you know, so when I get the question, I kind of try and steer them in a different direction because I think the aspects of what makes us unique are more based on how people experience our program throughout their 2 years. You know, it's a collaborative environment. How that transforms our students with the expectation that they in turn will go out and transform the world.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. Now, what I thought you were going to go with the postscript, if you will, to my question, and I'll ask this question now, is what is a real turnoff in the application? Now, again, it's 10 p.m. You've looked at hundreds of applications. You open one, and you feel like you're just wasting your time.
Yeah. So people, I would say, individuals who are regurgitating what they've seen on the website, who even, you know, go as far as to use the same language or terminology or phrasing, right?
Uh-huh.
So you can tell put no thought into the application, who may have sent the same level of response to a number of different programs,
mm-hmm.
or someone who doesn't necessarily give us a sense of who they are as a person.
Okay.
It's more about the what versus the why.
Right.
Someone who, you know, where there's lots of, you know, typos or just grammatical mistakes, so that mean that, to me, it tells that they didn't take enough time to really care about putting together a polished and professional application. I would say those kinds of things. You know, if you're talking about just, you know, what am I seeing on paper, right?
Right. That's what I was talking about.
Yeah.
So, all right, so I mean, I think that our last few minutes of conversation may have already answered this question, but I'm going to ask it anyways. Any last words of advice for MBA applicants considering Georgetown McDonough?
You know, I would say do your homework, prepare and plan, be authentic throughout the process. You know, you've already taken the first step in deciding to pursue your MBA, which, you know, personally speaking, I think it's one of the best degrees there is and a great return on investment. I'm a little biased. You know, now it's about, you know, taking that next step and allowing us to help you define your future at Georgetown.
Sounds good. Sherry, I think we could keep going for a long time here, but you've been very generous with your time, and I don't want to impose further or just abuse your generosity. Where can listeners and potential MBA applicants learn more about Georgetown McDonough's MBA programs?
On our website, I would encourage people to visit our website, as well as we have a Tumblr blog now, which is great. We have a Prospect Facebook group as well, so I would encourage people to visit that. Sign up for our Twitter accounts. There's a number of ways to access us. Would you like for me to give you those handles, or are you going to send those in a different?
You can give them, sure. Why don't you, if it's not going to take long, give it, and then we'll also include it in the show notes. Go ahead.
Okay.
So if you have it handy, if it's not convenient, then I'll just include it in the show notes.
Okay, well, I can at least give you the website. msb.georgetown.edu.
Okay, sounds good. We'll include links in the show notes at info.exceba.com/73 to the URL Sherry just gave, and we'll also look up the Tumblr blog, the Facebook group for prospective applicants, and the Twitter stream. And again, that will be at info.exceba.com/73, and we'll also link from the show notes the podcast I had last year with Professor Jeff Reed, who's the director of Georgetown's Entrepreneurship Initiative, as well as the podcast we had with Dan Mullany, who is a McDonough grad and head of MBA Project Search. Listener, so again, Sherry, thank you for coming. And listener, I want to thank you, too, for joining Sherry and me for our 73rd episode. If you find the show worthwhile, please share the good vibes by leaving a review on iTunes. Your doing so will help us spread the word about Admission Straight Talk, especially if you are kind enough to leave a five-star rating. So if you think we deserve 5 stars, please let iTunes know. There's a link in the show notes to our iTunes page where you can leave a review. And if you have a question for me, please ask it at info.accepted.com/73 or by sending an email to questions@accepted.com. Thanks again for coming. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.